Welcome to Dementia Matters, a podcast presented by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. There are currently more than 5.3 million Americans living with Alzheimer's, and over 40 million people living with this disease worldwide. Our podcast is here to educate you on the latest research, caregiver strategies, and available resources for fighting back against this disease. I'm your host, Nathaniel Chin. I'm a geriatric memory clinic physician at the University of Wisconsin, and I'm the son of someone who lived and died with Alzheimer's disease. I'll be talking with experts from around the state, as well as around the country, and asking the questions that I believe are in the minds of many in our community. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Dementia Matters. I'm here with Suzanne Bottom Jones, a registered nurse with over 15 years of experience working with the management of behaviors associated with dementia and other forms of cognitive impairment. She's also the former director of education and outreach at the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. Her current work focuses on encouraging health professionals and caregivers to use behavioral strategies that go beyond medication-only interventions. Just this year, Suzanne also released a children's book titled Nice to Meet You, Again, Empowering Children to Find Joy and Understanding in Loved Ones with Dementia. We have a lot to discuss today, so with that, we welcome Suzanne Bottom Jones to Dementia Matters.
Thank you.
So let me begin by asking, what reoccurring themes have you identified in working as a behavioral consultant and an educator?
After many, many years, it came to me that really what it's all about is their expression of need. A behavior equals an expression of need that is no longer said in a language that we can understand. So if we see all behaviors as an expression of need, then we can start understanding that we don't need to react to the behavior, but instead respond to the need.
So you are saying behaviors are not just acts of aggression or agitation, but they're trying to express a need.
Yes, and the act of aggression or agitation comes from the inability to express that need or the inability to understand how they can communicate with us.
So then instead of responding to a behavior, we really need to investigate, well, what are you trying to share with me?
Absolutely. And that is a complete change of culture, I know, for all of us. And I only give these tips as someone saying with collegial empathy, saying I've been there and I've made every mistake probably. And it's not an easy task to do to change our mindset from something that's happening to, okay, let me reverse the clock and see what could have potentially caused this versus seeing them as doing it to me.
When speaking of strategies, could you share 4 tips for current caregivers?
First and foremost, the first tip I say to everyone is if a behavior occurs, it's important to stop and rewind the clock. And if you actually think of it that way, you can say, okay, let's not react to what's happening right now, but instead let's rewind the clock and say, what happened a few moments ago? Who was involved? Where were we? What happened? And what is the potential trigger? If we look at behaviors as a response theory, or that there is a trigger that's triggering a response, we can start becoming the investigators we need to in order to understand that unspoken language. So that's number one, is stop if there's a behavior and rewind the clock. And that takes some practice to do. The second is to understand that whether pathology or trauma has caused the changes in the cognition, it's important for you to know that those changes are fluid. Somebody that is experiencing cognitive impairment today has a threshold that will change tomorrow or the next day or down the road. So if they could do this activity or have this conversation with you today, does not mean that they're going to be successful at it down the road. And if you understand that it's fluid and that that threshold is changing, you will constantly be looking at the right place of change, which is changing yourself versus trying to change them. That's number two. The next thing is to not assume that the person that you are caring for is understanding your language. Not only our spoken language, but our body language. That misinterpretation of cues, that misinterpretation of language, if we can get under control, our assumptions in seeing that people are just supposed to understand this common language and this common culture of ours, then we can decrease the number of interaction issues that we create by our assumptions. So that's number three. Number four is a little of those lofty ones, but it's something that I live by daily, and that is to choose to find joy. And it's choosing to find joy in every day. We can't find joy in every moment sometimes when we're dealing with dementia, because let me tell you, it's hard. I understand it. And everyone that's out there is saying that's not easy. You don't live in my shoes. And I understand that it isn't easy. And so I'm not asking people to find joy in every moment, but find joy in every day. with this loved one or with this person that they're caring for. Because if you find joy every day, you have the ability to start changing our mindset and seeing this as something we can be empowered to have an effect on versus happen to us.
I find in my clinic, the families that feel the strongest are the ones that can laugh.
Mm-hmm,
and that laughter and the enjoyment sustains them. I do have a question about your book. And so I'm hoping you can tell us a bit more about your book. In particular, you know, what motivated you to write it? Mm-hmm. And what do you hope the reader gets from it?
It's what I was looking for 15 years of practice and never found. So finally, I just wrote it after experiencing my father going through dementia. The book itself is inspired by so many families that I have witnessed and held hands with and cried with and seen say, I just need to stop visiting mom because it's too upsetting to myself and it's too upsetting to my children to see her this changed. And no matter how much I could share with her that I understand that it's difficult for you, but if you could change your expectations of her and expectations of that event, you could still have a loving interaction with her, whether she knows your name or not. You could just still be that friendly person that comes and she has the ability to still feel that love from you. Countless families are very frustrated and rightfully so and very, very saddened by the changes. And I've watched countless families walk away because they don't know how to deal with it at the moment. And so the hope is that the book helps them with some strategies to seeing a different expectation, seeing a different journey play out for them versus the way that mom has been in the past and only expecting that to be their journey.
Well, it's beautifully written and the pictures and the drawings are amazing. And of course, it's now being featured throughout Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my questions for you is, why do you think it was so important to write this book as a children's book instead of one focusing on adults?
First and foremost, I think that adult children, so our age, will be more likely to pick up a book for their children to learn about how to help with grandma and grandpa than we'd be to picking up a book for ourselves to learn of how to deal with mom or dad in a better way. So that was one of the reasons, is because it's a natural go-to for parents. The other thing is to write it within children, is that is the usual reason that people finally walk away. It's upsetting Johnny too much, or I don't know how to tell him what to do next, or I don't want him to have these memories of my mom and dad. So they're potentially the reason that they end up making that decision not to visit again. And so if we can help them move through that real barrier, then we can help them have a joyful journey for however long that they have left.
How do you feel like the best way is to educate the public about behavioral and psychological symptoms of dementia?
I think the best thing we can do is to talk about it and destigmatize it. And part of that can be through children. One of the things people ask me all the time is, should I bring Johnny when it's going to change his thoughts and his memories of his grandparents? And my response has been, you know, my job as a parent of my own children has been not to protect them from life, but to give them the tools to be successful in life. And so part of those tools to be successful is for them to learn empathy and difference. And I believe strongly that my children needed to be at the side of my father as he was passing with his dementia, because I wanted them to understand that they had a role that they could play. Not only could I empower them with the strategies to be successful, but I could also teach them to empathize with the changes in life journey and give them the confidence to know that they had a role in that journey of my dad. The more we understand the difference in people, the more we understand that difference is okay, we can engage our public in an empathy for what these families are going through. And then we understand that we don't have to isolate ourselves and be embarrassed at what dad or mom is saying or doing in public. Really, we're talking about a culture change, right? A destigmatization of just behaviors in general, when they can happen for many reasons, whether it's trauma or pathology, as we know, in mental health.
So aside from being an author, though, you're an app developer and a researcher. And so I'm wondering, you know, the past 2 to 3 decades of work have really led you to the creation of this program called Abate. And so what is this application and what do you hope to accomplish with it?
I give my brother all the kudos to this creative name, but Abate actually stands for Agitative Behaviors Assessment and Intervention Tools. It was my brothers and I that started this software platform that really has a couple of different purposes. The first is if I was asking staff or asking families to rethink of this culture of, okay, I need to look at things as a trigger versus them doing this to me, I needed to give them the tools to be able to collect that information. So this platform collects that. And then what it gives us the opportunity to do is look for themes. Once we have the themes, we can set it up so that it's at a one touch. So when we're bathing mom, if we hit bathing and mom or whoever the person is we're caring for, all the things that are triggers and all the things that have worked will come up on the app because it's completely customized to that person. And the beauty of the app is then it also thinks the app is actually changing. So as you're saying, this is what happened, I did this, and the intensity changed, and you're hitting a button for that, the app is saying, okay, next time you're bathing mom, this will be the intervention I'm going to put first, because that's the one that has changed the intensity of the behavior. The final thing that the app does is it gives us that bird's eye view. So we can look at a month's worth of behaviors. We can look at a month's worth of interactions and say, okay, so when I'm sharing information with my physician, with my psychiatrist, I don't have to walk in and say, I don't know, it's just crisis in my house. So we would actually have the information to say, okay, this is what's happened over the last 30 days. This is how many behaviors in a day. This is how many minutes it's taken. This is the time of day that it's happening. All of these things gives us power to change that person's quality of life by giving us information. And so we're really improving their outcomes by knowing more about what they're doing and having that bird's eye view.
And so right now, this is being actively researched as a tool.
This is. We just finished a pilot at a local nursing facility that had a dementia unit. That process is in place to get a larger pilot and to actually change the venues and potentially look at going home with this as a pilot as well for family caregivers.
Well, it's all very exciting. And I'd like to thank you again for being on Dementia Matters. We've really enjoyed having you.
Thank you. Well, and it's been exciting to be here and exciting to be a part of just giving a voice. And so I applaud you for that.
Dementia Matters is brought to you by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. The Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center combines academic, clinical, and research expertise from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and the Geriatric Research, Education, and Clinical Center of the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. It receives funding from private, university, state, and national sources, including a grant from the National Institute of Health for Alzheimer's Disease Centers. This episode was produced and edited by Alex Worley, and our executive producer is Rebecca Wazaleski. Our musical jingle is Cases to Rest by Blue Dot Sessions. Check out our website at adrc.wisc.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at dementiamatters@medicine.wisc.edu. Thanks for listening.